This is Channel 2.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker show here on channelradio.co.uk/2 in association with bizradio.co.uk. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the stonkingly gorgeous, lovely, brilliant, wonderful, amazing Amanda.
Hello.
Hiya. You all right?
Your introduction's getting a bit better.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You better than that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm happy now.
Are you? Yeah. Oh, that's good. I've got a tweet here from CBS for Kent, CBS number 4 Kent, and it says, Vanilla Web Business Bunker, please can you give me a shout-out? Don't be a mug. It says, don't accept the business energy renewal notice. Be smart. Use a broker. You could get a better deal from CBS for Kent, so why not use CBS for Kent for your energy needs and save potentially up to 40%. So if you're interested in saving money on your energy bills, give them a follow. CBS number 4 Kent on Le Twitter. And I know you've read this out, but I'm going to read it out as well because you read it out. I'll read it out, which is Slope Off Friday.
That's what we like, a repeat.
Yeah, exactly. final day to reserve your lunch at Herne Bay with host Kent BA, that's Bill Fox, Ocasio Carpe, 2 p.m. Friday, Slope Off Friday, November the 2nd, that's this Friday. Their last slope off was in France at the Chateau de Lille, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah, which apparently was quite debauched and went quite well.
Well, yeah, they made a whole weekend of it, though, wasn't it? Slope off Friday, true. Come back Monday.
They all went on a bus, yeah, absolutely. Cool. What you got?
Not a lot.
No emails left?
No, I have, honestly.
You're just being a nuisance now, aren't you?
No,
you're trying to get your own back.
Not at all. Mm. I'm just trying to think of a funny story I can tell of you when we were on holiday.
No such thing. I never do anything weird.
No. How's your belly?
My belly?
Mm-hmm.
My sunburn.
Your sunburnt belly.
My sunburn's fine. I burnt my tummy on the first day at Typhoon Lagoon. Have any of you ever been to Typhoon Lagoon?
I have,
I love Typhoon Lagoon. I love going round and round and round on a rubber tyre. Yeah. And I went round and round and round on the first day on a rubber tyre and I got sunburnt on my tummy.
You did?
Yeah.
You did. And would you listen to me? Put sun cream on. No,
I don't want sun cream on. Yeah. Well, your sun cream, the stuff you had was like the stuff at Discovery Cove. At Discovery Cove, they give you free sun cream, which is animal friendly. The trouble is it doesn't sink in. You walk around looking like a ghost all day, which was okay while we're at the theme park because everybody else looked the same. But once you come out in a restaurant at night, everybody goes, you're right.
That's why I made you put it on.
I know.
But you didn't get burnt when you put it on, did you?
True. Oh, no.
Apart from your belly.
Yeah. And my head. But my head always gets burnt. Because unlike Steve, I don't have luscious hair.
You don't have luscious hair, no. That is very true. Networking. Fancy a bit of networking. There's always great networking going on. And we have the Marsh Networking over coffee. The next one is next week, the 7th of November at the Cinqueport Arms. And they also do Marsh Networking over breakfast, and the next one is on the 29th of November at the Ship Dymchurch. Includes a full English breakfast. Bet there's no steak on that menu for breakfast. And then another Marsh Networking after over coffee on the 5th of December. December already. But all of those Marsh Networking out there on the Marsh, if you go to, it doesn't help when you give me an email that says book here.
No, I know. That's because I know where to go and you don't.
Book here. Book where?
If you go to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/Marsh, you can, in fact, book there.
There you go. You can book there. You can't book here. You can book there.
Exactly.
Definitely.
As you know, the Business Bunker radio show partner with the University of Kent Business School, and the university are staging a number of what they call business soundbite events, which are free. And the next one is scheduled for the 21st of November. It's a business soundbite event, and it's titled Man and Machine, the End of an Era? Are robots taking over the workplace? And that's taking place at the Sibson Building, which is the new building for the Kent Business School on the University of Kent campus in Canterbury. It's taking place at 5 p.m. on the 21st of November, and you can book here. You can book here by going to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/KBS and find out about it.
You do print out the most useful emails.
Mm-hmm.
Book here.
Exactly. And also, just pre-warning, the University of Kent Business School ran a business summit in 2018 in January. And it was that was the first time they'd ever run it. It was incredibly successful. They're now going to make it an annual event. So the 2019 event will be taking place in early January, date to be confirmed. It again will be a free event at the University of Kent. There were a few hundred people there last time, and there was some really interesting stuff. I'm going to be chairing one of the events on skills and disabilities.
Can you ask them to make sure it's not on a Friday?
I will try.
Because I put the last one on a Friday, and I can't do a Friday.
I will try. So I'm going to be chairing a workshop on employment of people with supported needs in the workplace, which is going to be interesting and fun. If you want to see what last year's summit was like, there's a full report, download and video. If you go to the Kent University of Kent Business School website, Summit 2018, you can download a full free report and video of what went on at the last one. So do check that out.
Good. More networking. Mm. Networking Kent, they host a networking meeting the last Wednesday of every month, and it's from 10:30 a.m. to noon, so nice decent hours networking, you know, not stupid o'clock in the morning. No witches, no pumpkins. Oh, Gary, just simply down to earth networking. I think you should have some pumpkins at least. The guest speaker is at Pink_Lemon Brand. So check that out. I know they're really popular. I think it's just £10, and the first few people that sign up, which may be too late now, but if you sign up, you can take your pop-up banner with you. But that's actually tomorrow.
Fantastic.
Yes.
Manana.
I've lost a week, see?
Manana. Tomorrow.
Exactly.
We're now into minimalist tweets.
Minimalist
tweets. I've had two tweets. One from the real MB, who says, "Business Bunker, shout." And he's the banqueting manager at the Mercure Hotel, formerly known and still known sometimes as the Great Danes.
Okay.
Yeah. And then Kent Horse Rescue have said, Business Bunker.
Hello. Have a shout out to you guys.
Have a shout out. So Kent Horse Rescue and the Mercure Great Danes, shout it out. Good. Dragon Bite, you mentioned this earlier.
Oh, there you go. There's the other half of the email.
This is on the 1st of November at 5 p.m. at Dragon Co-working. Join us for street food and an inspirational talk by Matthew Russell, who's the co-founder of the Copper Rivet Distillery. The Copper Rivet Distillery, since being formed in 2012, has become a major tourist attraction in Kent. Fabulous building down on the Medway Docks. It's absolutely gorgeous. Former pumping station.
Copper Rivet, yeah.
Yeah. It's become a tourist attraction in its own right, because, you know, because it's a lovely building with some interesting stuff where they distill gin. And it's one of England's best small batch distillers. It's a fascinating story about how the distillery came to be. Dragon Bite cost £20, including food and VIP entrance to the Dragon's Ten, which Amanda told you about earlier, which comes up after it. So you get food and a talk on this, and then you get free entrance to the event afterwards. So that's all on the 1st of November at 5 p.m. at Dragon Co-working. And you can book by going to
www.dragoncoworking.co.uk.
You
me into that.
I know.
That's your and bird thing, that is.
Yeah, I know. So dragoncoworking.co.uk.
And in fact, these days you don't need to use a www. I know. You can put anything in and it will come up.
Yeah, I know. And I am on a mission to try and stop people doing that, to be honest. Because you just don't need it, do you?
Not these days, no.
Not wibbly wobbly way.
You don't need wibbly wobbly way anymore.
No.
Or anything else you can think of for www in.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
I'm going to do one more email and then we're going to talk to Steve.
Okay.
Yeah. And this is another one of my things, so this is why I'm plugging it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's the 30-30 Business in Schools program. For regular listeners, you will know about this. For new listeners, you won't. It's a program that we run, which is totally free to schools, and we run it in conjunction with the Federation of Small Business, where we take up to 30 businesses into a school to meet A-level students to talk about the world of work. And it's a two-way thing. It is a two-way thing. We have businesses that tell students about the kind of skills and attitudes that we want as businesses to employ. But it's also an opportunity for businesses to learn about what young people, what millennials, and now Generation Z, if you want to feel really old, because they're entering the workforce. Generation Z are people born after the year 2000 who are just about to start work, would you believe? And it's about hearing about what Generation Z expect from the world of work. And there's some shocking news for some employers that don't seem to understand how the world has changed somewhat. And people don't particularly want to get up at 8 o'clock and start work and clock in any longer. So it's a good event.
I've been to several of them and I've really enjoyed being part of them.
Yeah, so we do workshops for both the businesses and the students. The students get workshops on the careers and the world of work and how to present themselves both on a written and from a dress point of view, how to dress appropriately for an interview, how to present themselves appropriately for an interview. And employers just get advice on how to, employers get advice on how to recruit. The apprenticeship schemes, and we normally get a talk from the Kent Supported Employment Group and a few other people with KCC. It's a great event. It's all free to everybody. It only takes a couple of hours. And the next one is taking place at the Longfield Academy on the 21st of November. That's in the Dartford area. If you want to know more, if you go to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/30-30, you can find out all about it. And if you keep hold of that address, we now have loads of schools that sign up. So these things happen on a regular basis. And we just list the schools that are next up and the date. Totally free to everybody, and it's a good crack. So that's the 30-30 programme, and the next one, 21st of November at the Longfield Academy. Thank you.
Well done.
You can do one more, and then I'm going to talk to Steve.
Oh, I thought I could have a break now.
Yeah. No, because you're going to scoot off in a minute, so you're not getting away without reading everything.
I'm tired. Oh, jet lag.
She needs to get back in the cupboard.
Volcano!
Right. We had a meal at Animal Kingdom in a Rainforest Cafe, if anybody's been there.
Have you
really
ever been
brilliant.
To Rainforest Cafe?
It's brilliant.
Oh, awesome. Apparently there's one in London.
Yeah.
But it may not be as good food.
It's really brilliant. It's, and like anything in America, you know, it's not just the restaurant. There's all kind of nonsense going on. They have an indoor thunderstorm every 20 minutes and stuff like that. But they had a dessert called a volcano. I've no idea what it was.
It was piles of ice cream.
Right.
Like different flavoured ice creams, and there was biscuits around the outside and chocolate sauce dribbled over and then a sprinkler on top.
Yeah. But every time somebody ordered one of these, the staff would come out and scream volcano at the top of their voice. But of course, everybody ordered them. It was really annoying.
Yeah, but you
and MC joined in as well.
Volcano!
Exactly, yeah.
It's exactly how it was. My daughter keeps telling me off, stop saying that! It's part of the holiday, isn't it? Anyway, talking of food, lunch, Women in Business lunch. The next Women in Business lunch is coming up on Thursday, the 6th of December at Eastwell Manor, one of my favourite venues. I love it there. Chaired by Emma Lydiard, MD Global Radio. For full details, because that's all you've given me, is go to kentwomeninbusiness.co.uk. It's from 11:15 till 2:30 p.m.
Yeah, they haven't finally announced the lineup of speakers yet, which is why I couldn't give you any more details.
I'll let you off then.
It is, I can't remember the lady's name, which is really unforgivable of me because she has been a guest on this show. It was the lady from the Anne Frank Trust. The lady that founded the Anne Frank Trust, I believe, is going to be one of the speakers. I believe.
But she has spoken at one of their previous.
Yeah, yeah. But they're still formalising the speaker lineup. But it's chaired by Emma Lydiard, who is Managing Director of Global Radio here in Kent.
What I just said.
Yeah, I know. I'm just reinforcing that.
I guess they don't believe me. Yeah. Anyway, shall we talk to Steve? Spock to Steve? Or
yeah, take over. Why don't you introduce him?
This is Steve. With luscious hair.
It's an absolute pleasure to welcome back after a few years.
Yeah, it's been a few years.
A few years. But you've been regular listeners and supporters of the show, Steve, and we do appreciate that. It's a pleasure to welcome back Dr. Steve Trim, Chief Executive of Venom Tech, and purveyor of a fine chilli sauce, we hear.
Yes, that's our new adventure, yes.
Yeah. Well, let's start off. I know you wanted to talk about chilli sauce because it's all Halloween-y and stuff like that, but I love what you do, and I've kind of been following your progress for quite a few years in what you do, and many years ago you gave me a tour of your creepy crawlies, which I'm still recovering from. So why don't you start off by telling the listener a little bit about Venom Tech and what it is you do, because it's really interesting, the kind of stuff you do.
Yeah, certainly, no problem. So I spent 10 years at Pfizer and then needed a new job, as a lot of my colleagues
did. Yeah, they moved, didn't they?
Yeah.
Without telling you.
Yeah.
They cleared off one day and changed the locks. Yeah,
a little bit like that. But I started to understand that venoms could actually be useful for new medications.
Mm.
So anybody that's ever taken any high blood pressure medication ending in pril, P-R-I-L, owes their life to snake venom.
Really?
And so there's 15 other drugs on the market that have come from venoms.
Right.
And the challenge was is getting hold of venoms in a usable format
mm.
that could actually be then used to actually develop new drugs. And so we set up Venom Tech to actually supply the venoms right from source. So mm. we have control of the animals, the creepy crawlies, as you say, in the labs, to humanely milk them like a herd,
mm.
Collect the venom, purify out its component parts.
Okay, I have this vision of these little, like,
milking machines. Just milking his head up.
Sort of what, it, yeah. They are micro milking machines.
Are they really?
Yeah. Not quite on the same scale, but yeah. And so then we actually collect the venom and separate out into its component parts, because each different component will do different things.
Sure. And, I mean, let's kind of look at it, because I find the whole thing fascinating. But first of all, and just wind back a little bit. Your PhD is in microbiology.
So no,
right, okay.
So I did a degree in genetics.
I'm right, okay.
And part of my year out was working on the Human Genome Project at the Sanger Center.
Right.
And then I went straight to Pfizer as a molecular biologist
right.
rather than a microbiologist.
Okay, right, right, okay.
And so I spent my sort of formative years in industry rather than academia.
Okay, cool. So coming forward to venom as a medicinal thing,
yeah.
give us an overview. You kind of explained it to me once when I first met you about the various properties of different venoms and why they can be used in medicine. Just kind of go over that again, you know, the kind of things that, yeah, I mean, you showed me some really weird animals that did nasty things, and you're going, really? I'm not letting that suck me. That's
that's generally good advice. Yeah. Working in the lab.
Not to let anything suck you.
Yeah, that's pretty much good advice for a standard day in the office.
Yeah. I seem to remember some kind of vicious sea slug thing as well that you told me about once.
We do have marines and working with jellyfish and corals and stuff, and sea snails for one of the most potent venoms in the world.
Yeah.
Because you've got a soft, squidgy snail that's evolved to prey on bony fish. And the only way it can do it is have a venom that kills it very, very fast.
Right. And presumably melts the bones to some extent.
No, that's sort of all part of the digestion inside.
Yeah.
But yeah, the venom is like crude oil. There's several hundred different components within each venom. And when we separate them out, we find different effects.
Mm.
So going back to captopril, the high blood pressure medication, when the third lance bites people, you have a couple of things going on, the anticoagulation of the blood, but also a catastrophic drop in blood pressure.
Right.
So somebody looked at that and thought, oh, that might be useful.
Yep.
So you take out the anticoagulation effects and the hemotoxic effects and actually just focus on the blood pressure lowering and then develop that as you would do into a therapeutic, testing it safe and effective and all those sorts of things.
Is it usual that there are components that work in isolation, if you see what I mean? So it's not a cumulative effect of the venom. You can actually isolate the different bits that have the different effects.
Yeah, so it's a bit of both, really. So you've got lots of different bits having different effects.
Mm.
But evolution doesn't waste things. So if something's in the venom, it's there for a purpose.
Mm.
And people often ask us, you know, why things like black mambas have venom that can kill, you know, 10 people in a go, when actually it's evolved venom that's that potent because it's for speed. Because they often live in trees and they have to kill, you know, they're killing birds. They can't follow the bird through the air. So it's overpowered.
Mm.
And so it's basically a shotgun approach. The venom has several different components that are all thrown in together to do the net effect that they want.
Mm.
And for us, that allows us to separate it out.
Mm.
And some of those things act on pain neurons, some of them actually kill bacteria. And we've got a recent paper out where we've actually discovered that within the venom gland of these animals, there's actually bacteria living.
Right.
And that's why the venoms have evolved antibacterial properties, because there's bacteria living in the venom glands.
Wow.
And that's some the new science that we've done this year.
Okay, cool. I mean, there's probably an obvious answer to this. I mean, how the hell do you find out what the active component is? You go, go on, bite me, big boy, bite me, and we'll have a look and see what you can do.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's two ways the drugs were discovered. The early drugs were very much discovered from seeing what happens when people get bitten by snakes. So,
sorry to interrupt, Steve, but is that in response to actually being bitten? So people are going, look, you've been bitten by this, we need to find out what it's doing. Is that where the research started? Or
yeah, it's what it's doing and how it's doing it. Yeah. So yeah, the high blood pressure medication, the anticoagulants, clot busting drugs from snake venoms, all these have come about by looking at what the venom does when it bites people.
Right.
But then later drugs, you've got Prialt, which is the a painkiller from the cone snails. And Byetta, which is a type 2 diabetes drug from the Gila monsters. And both these have been discovered from doing classical drug discovery, looking at venom components and finding out what they do in the lab, as opposed to what they do in the pathological state.
Okay.
Because the cone snail didn't evolve to cure pain in humans.
Right.
It just so happens that one of the components that is involved in the venom in killing the fish is actually hits a really important receptor for pain killing in humans.
Okay, cool. So you kind of isolate these components, and then you extract those components from the venom,
yep.
And then presumably you sell them to the drug research companies for them to develop. From that point on, when they are researching the properties of these venoms, do they then require more and more venom, or can they synthetically reproduce it?
So to avoid having to have an enormous warehouse full
of snakes, yeah. Just got this warehouse full of snakes, mate, all right?
Yeah. Then we use sort of peptide chemistry to actually mimic the venom. So we separate the venom out into its component parts, and then finding out which ones are interesting, characterize them, and then make them synthetically. But to be able to find things that we don't know exist, we work from the whole venom to begin with.
Right. I had this whole picture, you know, this whole little miniature milking machines and spiders lined up.
You think Steve got up at 6 a.m. with a bucket and went and milked a snake?
Yeah. Not a snake, you know.
Yeah. A whole warehouse full of snakes, yeah.
That's what my team do.
Yeah. He's got people that do that now.
Exactly.
Yeah. But they still wear little milking uniforms and have a stall. It's just a very small stall.
Do they have to wear rubber gloves?
Yeah.
Yes.
Milkmaid's outfit.
It's fascinating when I visited your lab and you look at, especially with spiders, it struck me that you get these big kind of red-knee spiders and tarantulas that are big and hairy and scared of living daylights out of small children. But it seemed to be that the smaller spiders were more toxic than some of the bigger ones. Is that true, or is it just a...
Actually with the spiders, but it's not all, you know, we have a lot of small spiders in this country that are not dangerous.
Yeah, sure. You haven't seen her when she's faced with one. it's not the spider that's dangerous.
Actually, that's unfair. I'm fine with spiders.
Yeah.
I am. I don't go running and go,
no, that's true.
I don't. No. You do.
Ruins my joke.
I know. Yeah. That's what I'm here to do today, ruin the jokes.
But things like the black widows and Brazilian wandering spiders and those sorts of things are on the smaller end, whereas some of our tarantulas, as commonly called the theraphosid spiders, some of them are as big as my hand, weigh about 70 grams.
Mm. See, that type of spider I would run away from.
But it's the little one, you know. Everybody always wants to see the black widows or the redbacks when they come to the lab, and they're literally sort of a centimetre or two leg span. They are tiny.
Mm.
So are there, and I know this, we're just going, well, sort of staying on point, but we want to get onto the source, but are there actually any venomous, harmful spiders here in the UK?
No, so all spiders are venomous.
Right.
But they're not all harmful to people.
Unless you're allergic, I guess.
Yeah, so you can have an allergy to anything, and obviously the top spider in this list is the false widow that everybody likes to talk about, and the Daily Mail spider, as it often gets called. Mm. And the key thing is that it does have a venom, and that venom is, from a biology point of view, is neurotoxic. So it causes pain and those sorts of symptoms. But it doesn't cause the flesh melting ulcers.
That's a relief.
Because when you
bite me, big boy, do your worst.
When you look into those stories, they generally have to give a huge load of IV antibiotics to sort that out, which gives you a clue that it's actually an infection. that's causing those sorts of things. So yeah, there's nothing in the UK that's going to ruin your day in terms of spiders.
But all spiders have toxins.
Yes.
Presumably that's from a feeding point of view. That's how they kill flies or whatever it is they feed on.
They can kill prey as big as themselves and sometimes bigger.
Right, okay.
And we've actually got permission from Natural England to actually extract venom from British spiders, and it's something we do a reasonable amount of.
Oh, okay.
It's quite challenging work. They are very tiny.
Tiny, that's really tiny milking machines.
Those spiders in our bathroom weren't that tiny. You come milk them.
So we can invent nano machines to... Anyway.
It's all being considered.
Yes. So, one more question. So as you discovered, or they were discovering that obviously there were things within the venoms that could be helpful, so now do you just, anything that's got a venom, you just milk and try and see what's in it, generally?
Yeah, so we are expanding the collection, as Paul mentioned earlier about marine stuff. So we're looking into jellyfish and anemones, and we've got a master's student doing that at the Deep in Hull, which is quite exciting. Our mainstay is snakes, spiders and scorpions, but we also work with centipedes, hornets, wasps.
Centipedes?
Yes.
So
centipedes and millipedes, closely related, but millipedes are vegetarians and poisonous, and centipedes are predators and venomous.
So what's the difference between venomous and poisonous?
That's a very good question. So venom has to be actively delivered.
Right.
So the snake and spiders are venomous because their venom is actually delivered through a needle, whereas poison arrow frogs and millipedes are poisonous because you have to bite them to get the toxin.
Okay.
So if it bites you, it's venomous, and if you bite it, it's poisonous.
Okay.
Okay. So no eating those millipedes anymore?
No.
I swerved that, didn't I? I nearly took a bite out of that toad that I saw the other day. I look at the size of that one. It looks like a burger. I'll have that. And then I got distracted. Yeah. That was lucky. Okay, now that makes sense. It's a fascinating topic, though, isn't it? You know, I think everybody's fascinated by it because I suppose in this country we're not used to venomous things, really. An adder's about the only thing that's poisonous here, and I don't know how toxic that is. Is it
venomous, yeah.
Yeah.
Adders do have a necrotic venom. It will affect your blood coagulation, and it's basically the most dangerous thing we have in the UK that's not human.
Right. But you don't really see very... I have seen one in a while, but you don't see them very often, really.
You've actually got to search them out.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. So I guess our fascination is the fact that we don't come across these creatures very often. People that live in Australia and other places come across these things on a more regular basis.
Yeah, definitely. And a lot of farmers in third world countries come across venomous snakes all the time.
Yeah.
And so it's great to be involved in the community that got snake bite recognised as a neglected tropical disease by the WHO, because these farmers out in paddy fields and stuff are being bitten by snakes, and people didn't realise that it's a huge problem.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, did you see that Facebook video the other day of that kid, a three-year-old, and an anaconda? Anaconda's a huge constricting snakes, a massive thing. It must have been 20 foot long. And this three-year-old kid, Burmese kid, has walked up to the snake, grabbed it by its head, lifted it up, kissed it, sat on it, played it around. And the snake just laid there, just did nothing until the parents came along and went, I think I'd leave that alone if I were you.
It was obviously well fed that day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it obviously didn't fancy Burmese baby or whatever, luckily. But fascinating stuff. It's always interesting to talk to you, Steve, about this kind of stuff and the knowledge you have on this. And being serious for a moment, the breakthrough kind of work that you're working on in developing these medicines that help lots of things. But you've taken another step.
We have.
You've really gone big time with this.
This has been a special year for new adventures for us, certainly. Going back to what I was saying about the venom, different components having different effects. So we've entered into crop science market. A lot of venoms have evolved to kill insects. And because they're peptides, the hypothesis is they'll be broken down, so they won't bioaccumulate in the food chain. So that's one area we've stepped into, as well as cosmetics. So we've got a sensitive skin cream from sea anemone venom on the market.
Okay.
How's that going?
That's going well. We've just it's included in products in South Africa and America at the moment.
I just can't imagine.
Do you want your face bitten?
Well, no, I can't imagine women wanting to put like What did you say it was from?
From sea anemones.
Sea anemones. I guess, did you have a picture of, like, Nemo on the front or something? Because that probably might make it more appealing.
I'll be kissed by Nemo.
Yeah, but, you know, the clownfish has been involved because, obviously, they live in the sea anemones.
Yeah.
The cosmetic industry is all about the marketing story. And when we started in this, it became very clear that the spiders and snakes were not the poster boys for those sorts of
really? You surprised me.
And then, having a conversation with our friend Stefano at McNaid Fine Foods, and I was talking about how venoms are made up of loads of different components, and one of those components actually binds to the same target that chili does. And it was using it as a way of explaining how venoms act, and the fact that when you feel the heat of chili, it's actually pain, and right. Your brain's saying, this is painful.
Yep.
And so this spider, the Trinidad chevron, has evolved to utilize this to deter predators, because obviously a bite from a spider, this is going to feel like an injection of Tabasco sauce, and you're going to remember that and not go back.
Right.
And Stefano, being obviously in the food industry, wouldn't it be great if we made a sauce out of that venom? And we had a good laugh about it, and it bubbled along for a couple of years. And then later this year, it actually became a real thing, which has become Steve's scientific sauce.
So he's got a bottle of toxins here.
I do.
He wants me to put on my burger.
So it doesn't have any health properties. It just stops the chili sauce from burning.
It'll probably give you a good clear through if you
No, so it burns like the chili sauce does.
Right. Mm. Okay. So it's not actually... Okay. I'm with you now.
Yeah. What it does is actually acts on the same pathway as the venom. So we've made a chili sauce that mimics the venom's active components.
Okay, and what gives it its flavour?
Chili.
Chili. And with the sauce, there's lots of nice vegetables in there as well.
Okay.
And it's made in Kent, very locally.
Although I did see on Twitter that you've already had a request to supply it in Holland.
Yes.
Yeah, which is interesting.
We are getting international requests already, which is great.
So come on, Steve. Open it up. Let's have a test. Let's try this. Come on, let's try this. I love a bit of chili. My boys are evil, and they put evil things on it. They got this mongoose chili sauce, which
I heard of that one.
Yeah, it's what's
it's probably not made from mongoose though, is it?
No. It's what's the scale they use for chilies? Oh, I can't remember.
Scoville scale.
Yeah, it's off that. It's off the scale of that. And they went and stuck some on a pizza I had once, and I was ill for about 4 days afterwards. That's lovely.
Good stuff.
Yeah, that's good, is it?
Good stuff. Oh. It's not silly under the scale, but it's definitely hot.
It's definitely hot. Definitely hot. It's not silly hot like Jimmy and Stu would do it, but you'd know you'd had it. That's fantastic.
You would like a glass of water?
No. So the Trinidad chevron spider,
indeed, yes.
Is the picture on here. Is there any of that in there?
No, because we would need a big warehouse for the spider.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a lot of venom to take out of a little spider, isn't it? I bet he's feeling the pinch for that. That's gorgeous. So how long did it take you to perfect that?
It's been bubbling along for a couple of years, but it's been really sort of this year where we've done a few trials.
You're going to have to give me that now, because I dipped my finger in it.
Yeah.
Deliberately.
That was your plan.
Yeah.
So we've tried a few different variations, all being sourced from local producers in Kent. They're making it for us, because obviously we're not a food company.
Yeah.
Then we found the recipe that fits the pharmacology of what we want to build the story, but is also a nice sauce.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it is a nice sauce. It is hot. It is very piquant, but it's not offensively hot.
We want something with a bit of depth of flavour.
Without a doubt. And if you actually put it on food rather than just drinking it out of the bottle, I'm sure it would mellow it somewhat. But absolutely gorgeous. So what's the plan for it? Have you done this specifically as a business venture, or is it kind of just a bit of fun to start with that has kind of taken off?
It's sort of a marketing tool for us, looking at ways of building new web content, and just sort of getting more people to know who we are, because as a small business, it's difficult to just get known. And so we still go to conferences, and people A, don't know Venom's useful in drug discovery, and B, therefore, don't know we exist. And we're the only commercial venom lab in the UK, so there isn't a market out there that we're pushing ahead and building it.
Sure.
So it's a tool to get it out there, and that's why we've made sure that the science of what we do flows through in the product.
And, and it's a fascinating story, and it's an interesting story. I'm just interested in that you say you're the only venom lab in the UK. Are there many in the rest of the world?
For us, when we're looking at our competitors, we look at about three across the world.
Okay.
There are many other venom labs, mainly producing venom for anti-venom.
Right.
And most tropical countries where they have a snake bite or a spider bite problem, there's a lab collecting the venom to make the anti-venom.
Yeah.
But there's very few of them that actually understand drug discovery.
Right, okay.
And so that's sort of sets us apart.
I mean, because I guess that's the first question you're always asked when you tell people about what you do, is they assume you're making anti-venom.
Yes.
Yeah, which isn't the case at all. You don't touch that part of the market at all.
We keep an eye on it for our own needs.
Yeah, but of course, just in case. Okay, so that's a good question as well. I kind of know the answer to this.
And we do have research collaborations that are starting to look into novel ways of treating snake bites in particular.
Yeah.
And that's come out partly through the WHO listing of snake bite. And also the science of understanding the venom helps us to then lead into that way. But as a business, it is using the venom as a tool. It's our focus.
Cool. And I guess I need to ask, do you have the Tropical Medicine Hospital in London on speed dial?
Yeah, they know who we are. Yeah. One of the key things we set up early on is that most people will think venomous animals, anti-venom, whereas we thought venomous animals, safe systems of work and separation, venom, anti-venom.
Right.
And so we actually had a patent on a safe method of feeding venomous snakes.
Right.
Because...
lob it from outside.
just separation.
Because
people who've been keeping these have never thought of doing that.
It's amazing, isn't it? I don't know if you've come across it. There's a chap called Nassim Taleb, who's a Lebanese-American, and he's a bit grouchy, but he's an incredibly clever man, and he's written a number of books, one of which is Anti-Fragile and The Black Swan and things like that. And he is not a fan of academics, but he has three PhDs himself, and he speaks something like 20 languages, but he's not a fan of academics. And he tells this wonderful story, against himself as well, about all, because he has been an academic. They travel all over the world, going through millions of airports, and not one of these very clever people ever thought about putting wheels on their suitcase.
Yeah.
It took 400 years for somebody to work out to put wheels on your suitcase. Yeah, and it's a bit like that, really, isn't it? That you're involved in something, but you don't really think about it very heavily. And feeding animals, everybody goes, no, we'll just do it quickly and hope it doesn't get us. Yeah. We'll shove it with a stick. But because I've seen how you feed the animals. Yeah. And did you say you have a patent on it?
Yeah, we patented it.
Yeah.
We've let it lapse now because, it's a part of our brand image to show that we have safe systems of work, and we work differently to the more maverick labs that you can see on YouTube.
Right.
And the scary practices. So it's making us sort of stand out. But for me, having a background in pharmaceutical work and health and safety in particular, it was just an obvious step to go. It was amazing that they...
Putting wheels on a suitcase, basically.
The patented space was there. It was bizarre.
Was it one of those light bulb moments? Did you go, why don't we do it this way and then we won't get bitten?
No, actually, it was methodical planning from the beginning. That was
He's really boring. He doesn't leave anything to chance. He's really boring, he is.
It was looking at, I'm going to need to get a lab full of the most dangerous animals I can find. How are we going to do this in a safe way that we can come back and do it again tomorrow? So yes, it is boring, but it's part of the system in the beginning. It wasn't a quick throw in, or perhaps there might be a better way.
And I need to ask you this because everybody's screaming at me, ask him, ask him, ask him. I know the answer anyway, but have you ever been bitten?
No.
Has anybody that worked for you ever been bitten?
No.
No, none of you have been bitten. That's so boring.
It's boring.
It's just really boring, isn't it?
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. That is the process and the way we work.
Yeah.
Keeps the staff happy as well.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
They're not fearing for their life when they come into work.
Cool. Steve, thank you so much for joining us. I love the chili sauce.
Good.
I love Venom Tech and I love the story of what you do. It is such a fascinating thing that you do. And we wish you continued success and all power. For the moment, Dr. Steve Trim, Venom Tech, thank you so much for being on the Business Bunker Show.
We always appreciate the support.
And I love your sauce.
You can keep that in your chili cupboard.
I know. I have
well away from me.
My own cupboard full of chilies and stuff. I am a chili fan of all kinds. So, yeah, fantastic. Amanda needs to go fairly shortly.
I'm going now.
Before you go, tell us who you've got on your show on Friday.
I've got a great show on Friday. I have no idea who my co-host is yet, but I have a great guest anyway. Mm. So if anybody fancies co-hosting, give me a tweet and maybe you can fit on. Mm. But our guest...
She wouldn't have me.
No. You're busy.
I am busy. Yeah.
But no, I wouldn't have you anyway. My guest is Mark Kingston Jones, who is the owner of Team Building from Byte.
Ah.
Not Spider Bites. But Gorilla Bites, Team Building for Byte. They work with lots of different reserves, Port Lim, Howlett's, Woburn, and so up in Scotland. And what they do is they do corporate team building days and activities where you make either feeders or toys or equipment for the animals in the reserves to improve the quality of life for the animals in the reserve. Absolutely amazing work what they do, and just so novel because they use the materials, they use always recycled materials, and they say they work on site, so they do a lot of Port Lim, and they've made towers for the monkeys or feeders for the meerkats. So amazing work what they do. Mm. And he's going to come on and tell us all about it on Friday.
Fantastic.
11 till 12.
Because at your event, the Venues Expo this year, they did some exercises there where they made some stuff for the gorillas
They made toys. So at the Venues and Events Expo Southeast we did in May, they came along and did a workshop on the team building, and they made out of old fire hoses, they made toys for gorillas which have little holes in, so they'll put food in. And what they actually did is from the morning session, their team then went to Port Lim and threw them into the gorillas, so then we had live video feed of the gorillas actually playing with the toys. And what they said is one of the things is when they do the team building, obviously people get into it in the drills and saws and everything making this stuff, but then they actually get to see the animals using the things that they've made, which shows the enrichment, which is brilliant.
Yeah, the gorillas went, you've made this very well. Look, so he got his screwdriver out, didn't he, and redid it. Yeah.
No.
Cool.
Anyway, thank you for that. I'm now going to go and enjoy the rest of the show. I'll leave you in Paul's capable hat. Well, semi-capable hands.
Thank you, Amanda. So that's the Business Bunker Extra Show, Friday at 11 o'clock with Amanda and a to-be-announced co-host and her lovely guest from Team Building Bites.
Fabulous.
Fantastic.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks, Amanda. See you later. Bye. We've still got some tweets coming in and we've still got some emails to read, and we haven't got very much longer on the show either. So what have we got here? I think you've read these, haven't you?
The top one I haven't.
Okay, all right. So the Ashford Business Awards, the entries close, I think, tomorrow. So you've got your last chance to get in to the Ashford Business Awards. There are 8 different categories of award, and it's not just for Ashford. It's if your business is based in Ashford, Hythe, on the Romney Marsh, Folkestone, Deal or Dover, you can enter the Ashford and South Kent Business Awards. Very successful awards. There's a great awards dinner which is taking place at the Ashford International Hotel in November. I can't remember the date. I should know it because I'm chairing it. But it's a date in November. I think the 28th of November. That'll do for the moment. But if you want to find out for sure, if you want to find out about the award categories to enter the award or to find out about the award dinner, if you go to businessawardskent.co.uk/Ashford Business Awards, all the details will be there. There's also... this is fantastic. I've actually been here and looked at this at Finch Cox at Goudhurst. I don't know if you know Finch Cox. For many, it's a gorgeous, gorgeous country house. I want to say Queen Anne house. I can't definitively say it's a Queen Anne house, but it looks like it. It is a gorgeous, gorgeous country house. And for many years, it was a piano museum. Unfortunately, they couldn't survive. And a lovely chap called Neil actually bought it as a family home and has refurbished it. But he's also a bit of a piano freak. And I I had the pleasure of interviewing him back in the summer and having a tour of the house. And he said to me that when he was a schoolboy, he actually visited the piano museum because he was learning to play the piano. He then became a very, very successful trader in the city and stopped playing the piano. And he's now bought a house and he decided to relearn the piano. Okay. And in the house, they have a cellar. Now, you know, you get a picture of like some little dank coal hole. Yeah. This is a vaulted cellar that has 8 grand pianos in it, wow, each in their separate areas, individually lit. Now, that's a cellar.
Yeah.
That is a cellar. Okay. And they have a piano school there. Okay. Wow. And he's also turned a little bit of the coach house into some accommodation so that if you go on a piano course there, you can stay over. So they now stage piano recitals. And I know they recently had a fantastic recital playing Chopin. And they have piano schools there. And they say, make someone's Christmas extra special with a weekend of world-class piano tuition at any level. So from beginner up to concert level. There's luxury accommodation and delectable food and drink. I tell you, just visiting the place is worth it, whether you do the course or not. Find out about it. Go and turn to look at the website. It's finchcox.com. And you can find out all the things that go on there. But it is absolutely unbelievably stunning. So check it out, finchcox.com, and maybe buy someone that you know that fancies piano lessons some really good piano tuition. What else have we got? I've got to do it all myself now she's left, haven't I? It's no good, is it? Typical. I've had a tweet from Supply My Business. I've got to find my glasses now. Don't get old, it's not worth it. I tell you what, it is scary as well when people are collapsing live on television and you realise they're much younger than you are. That's really scary.
Very sad.
Sad news, a very sad weekend of lots of different things that happened. Yeah. Just on that, with the helicopter crash at Leicester City at the football club, bizarrely, I'm a Chelsea fan, and bizarrely, 22 years ago to the week was when Matthew Harding was killed in a helicopter crash as well. How bizarre is that? It's just really strange. Anyway, our sympathies go out to the family and friends of all the people affected by that terrible, terrible accident.
Just on the subject of the Glenn Hoddle situation, it just showed the importance of people knowing how to do cardiac resuscitation.
Absolutely.
You know, because actually that's what saved his life, was that somebody in the studio knew what to do.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You don't particularly want to hear the story, but I had to. My dad collapsed, and I had to give him CPR for a long time. Sadly, he did pass away, but in the best possible way, he went out with a bang. But but you're absolutely right. Knowing how to do CPR mouth to mouth is incredibly important because you never know when it will come in useful. And in that particular instance, I think it saved his life. It is really, really useful, and it's not a difficult technique, is it? In reality, and it's a shame more people don't learn how to do it because you never know.
Yeah, school children should be taught how to do
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
So that actually becomes a skill that goes through then the generations because you never know when you might need it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. No,
that'd be great. Yeah. You know, I mean, and it's also one thing to be taught it, but you need to be taught it by someone who knows what they're doing because, you know, giving someone CPR is not nice. You know, you're scared of hurting them, and then you go, when the paramedics run, no, give it some welly.
I think the key thing is to remember you can't hurt them.
Yeah,
because they're dead.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why you're doing it.
So yeah, exactly.
If you do, it would be an improvement.
Exactly, and that's what you're
exactly.
Take away from it.
Yeah, exactly. But you're right, it's really important that we know some basic first aid at that level, and everybody should. It's a really important thing. When I was a kid, I was in the Boy Scouts, and that was one of the great things of being in Scouts. You learn loads of stuff like first aid. And it's surprising, you know, 50 years later, let's not get carried away here, 50 years later, I still remember some of the things that I learned there. They're probably out of date now, you know. You're people going, you don't want to do it like that anymore. We've got an inflatable one of those now. Yeah. Really? But even so, the basic knowledge is incredibly useful because you never know when it will come in use. Mm. Like sucking poison out of an arm and putting tourniquets on and stuff.
Yeah, none of that works, though.
No, no, but it's a good myth, isn't it?
Yeah, the difference with the old versions of CPR is they still worked.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't matter when you learnt it,
It still works. It still works, yeah, exactly. Mm. So what do you do if you're bitten by something like that?
Run away.
ow.
No, the key thing is to control the wound and keep the patient calm, which is going to be easier said than done.
Mm. Yeah.
Because anything jumping around or, you know, rushing about is going to speed up the circulation and therefore speed up the venom circulation through the system. And the key thing is to basically not mess with the wound. That any cutting or biting and sucking of the wounds, any of this just delays proper treatment.
Right, absolutely. Cool. I've had a tweet from Supply My Business and they say, well done to Vanilla Web and Butterflies, that's Amanda, for fighting off the jet lag today, you're right, and enjoying the show from a cold office. And Laura did a brilliant job last week. She did indeed. We're kind of at the end of the show now. I need to tell you something that's happening. Amanda's told you about her show on Friday, but we've got an interesting guest on the Imaginarium show on Saturday at 1 p.m. joining Dave Barry. We've got Roger Dean, and Roger Dean is a legendary artist and creator of album covers. He also developed the Virgin Music legendary logo. So he's going to be on the Imaginarium show here on Channel Radio 2 on Saturday on the Imaginarium show at 1 p.m. with Dave Barry. Do tune into that. It's going to be a cracking show, and it's going to be really interesting with someone that's developed album covers for 30, 40 odd years. So do check that out on Saturday. But that brings us to the end of the show. Just want to say a huge thank you to today's show guests, to Jamie Cheshire, who you didn't hear from, but Jamie introduced us to Jane Abbott from the Benenden Hospital. Thank you so much, Jane, for being on the show. It was a pleasure to hear from you and to hear about the great work that you're doing at the hospital. And as always, it was great to hear from Dr. Steve Drim of Venom Tech, Chief Executive of Venom Tech, and purveyor of fine chilli sauce.
Indeed we are, yes.
But we'll be back with another show next week. Have a great week in between, and we'll see you all soon. Bye for now.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.